Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Elena Santigade. My guest today comes at cheese from an angle we haven't covered so much in recent years, cheese in the professional kitchen. On today's show, we'll get into why we don't see cheese headlining more restaurant menus, and we'll get into the budding opportunities chefs and line cooks have to make it a powerful and cost-effective ingredient. Rachel Freer is many things. She's an American Cheese Society certified cheese professional. She's the culinary specialist for counterculture, and she's been dubbed the cheese chef for the cheese course. Rachel, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
It's so great to have you here and in studio at that. Even though, listeners, I will say this studio is pretty chilly here January 21st. Very cold in New York today. So let's jump right in. Excluding the occasional cheese board menu item, why don't we see more high-quality cheese featured on restaurant menus, Rachel? I'm talking like a mention of Vermont Creamery as the goat cheese on a salad or like Roth Buttermilk Blue shaved on a steak. Why is that?
So I think, in my experience working in a restaurant, a cheese-focused restaurant, working a little bit with chefs in New York City, in supplying cheese, that there is kind of a fear of high cost for cheese and not enough confidence on how to handle that cheese because it is a specialty product.
Right.
Just like, let's say, a truffle or uni or something else that's high cost that would make it onto a chef's menu.
Right.
But chefs feel that maybe they personally, if it's a chef-oriented restaurant, may understand the product, but maybe they don't have a staff that would entirely know how to make that cheese last and be, you know, work on the menu.
Right. So it's like a fear of wasting out this high-quality thing.
Yes. It's a high-cost product, which
now, when you say high cost, but can we frame that? Because I've never worked in a professional kitchen or done the buying for a restaurant, although I've seen restaurant distributor lists. Where does it fall on the spectrum of ingredients in terms of cost? You compared it to truffles, I would assume are actually way more expensive.
But there are some cheeses that might, challenge that, price.
That's true. That's true.
Seasonal cheeses in particular.
Right.
So the conversations usually are around food costing, right? So you're going to food cost a menu item and down to every single ingredient that goes into that recipe.
Okay.
And that equation needs to be profitable.
Right.
You can't just charge, $40 for a goat cheese salad that doesn't have a reason for being $40.
Right. And as a restaurant, I would assume maybe it's the chef, the GM, and or the owner together sort of have what they understand is would be the assumed price
to
the end customer.
Yes, a food cost percentage that you're trying to keep your items, your menu in.
Okay.
To be able to turn a profit on your menu items. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you are using an item that's like truffles or uni or something more expensive, then that you might, obviously you're going to make less money and profit in that item, which is okay if it's a seasonal item and it draws in interest and, that works.
Right, because it's serving another purpose in a way.
Exactly.
It's like elevating your menu.
And it's the creativity of the chef and it's, the prestige of the restaurant. It could be a seasonal item that you're showcasing that gives you, interest.
And I feel like that's true actually at retail too. It's like a retailer has a target cost percentage for their cheese case, but your any given cheese might be, you know, somewhere on a certain spectrum.
Right. So, for example, working, let's say, with New York City chefs, right?
Okay.
For a moment, when I was working with them on providing cheeses for them.
Right, because you used to sell cheeses to chef.
Yes, for a moment in time. So the conversation would go, we want local cheeses.
Okay, interesting.
Good start. We want New York cheeses, and it needs to be $10 and under.
So how much? So, what percentage of your list fit that criteria?
Maybe one.
1% or one
maybe
cheese?
Maybe one cheese. So, you know, as cheese professionals, you know, and working in distribution and working in retail stores, the conversation needs to be, you know, there's a learning curve, you know, a respectful learning curve to chefs to kind of like steer them towards what do they actually want and what do they actually mean and what's going to work for them.
Right.
So you mean local, you mean East Coast, right?
Or
you mean like, you know, a little bit more than just New York City cheeses because we are in New York City.
Right. You know? We're not talking about a 50-mile radius,
you know,
here.
Some, and then everyone knows like the prestige of Vermont cheeses. There are great cheeses. And they're like, yeah, we love things from Vermont as well. I'm like, okay, great.
That opens
Let's
it up a
work
little.
With, you know, a little bit more, you know, variety. But then I'm like, you know, these are artisanal cheeses. You know, these are cheeses that are maybe cave age. There's a lot of work going into them. You know, just like any other like fine product that you guys are using.
Very labor intensive.
So it's hard to find a cheese like that for $10 and under.
Now, how does that... So, okay, let's say you make the case then. How... Oh, like, how does that... How did that fly in those days?
So it usually goes, okay, what do you got?
Right.
So that means, and I, you know, I would say like 80% of the chefs, including myself, when you know, I'm creating a menu item, I'm like, okay, let's follow creativity. Let's follow taste. Because that's the leading thing. You know, something has to taste good.
Right. It has to taste good.
An item on your menu has to taste good. It has to be special. So they're like, all right, what do you have? Like, tell me what.
Sell me.
Yeah, exactly. Sell me the higher priced cheese. And then that's, you know, that's okay, we've tasted cheeses. The chef is really excited about this one particular cheese from the East Coast.
You've got her.
That's really beautiful. That may be like, you know, $18 a pound.
And she's like, she gets
like,
it.
Great. Okay. But how long does it, you know, how long will it keep?
Right. What's my,
like,
how's this going to survive?
Yeah. Can you ensure me that it's going to come in like perfect condition so I can use it for 2 weeks, you know? It's this whole like kind of like, you know, which makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, you want to obviously maximize on your product, your ingredients in a kitchen. And that's a whole, you know, I felt that usually they would say, you know, maybe in the future and not right now. It was a harder sell because they're like, okay, I don't know how to approach that cheese or like care for it or like I'm not sure if it's going to work long-term.
So it's like you can overcome the cost question even and bring someone over into understanding it as a more value-added product.
Exactly.
But then it becomes a handling question.
Exactly.
And shelf life.
And how shelf life, how, you know, how do we keep it?
Right. I mean, when I was opening Le District, one thing we talked about a lot with the kitchen staff was like, how are certain cheeses going to perform?
Right.
Exactly. How are they going to slice?
Exactly.
How, you know, when you're working with like base, like line cooks who have basic skills and a lot of them, it's like, how easy is this cheese going to be for them to work with? Or how hard is it going to make my life?
Right. So then you realize with the chef maybe, and the chef, you know, the hardest attention to keep in the industry are chef's attention. You know,
why is that? And what do you mean by that?
They are very busy. They're super busy. They think they're busy. They are busy. You know, restaurant industry is very hard. You know, back of house is hard.
Right.
It's a lot of hours. It's a lot of prep. It's you know, it's hot in the kitchen. It's no doubt a very demanding position. If you are lucky enough to talk to chefs directly, you know, they don't have, you know, large attention span. So, you know, it comes down to, all right, I brought the cheese in, but, you know, I might not necessarily be the one handling it. And I have seemed to identify, including like, you know, working with, you know, line cooks or prep cooks myself, there's a lack of training
like on how to in their handle. Background.
Exactly. Mm. You know, they come from culinary school. They may have touched upon cheese, may have touched upon fermentation, but there's no real focus on like what are molds on cheese, you know, right. how to handle them.
Right.
You know, what are these different flavor profiles that we taste? Mm. You know, when is a cheese, you know, past its prime? Mm. You know, all these things I think are missing information for back of house, for chefs to have that confidence. Once again, it's confidence in right. knowing how to work with that cheese.
Right. It's almost like when I think about like other proteins in the kitchen, right. it's like, first of all, there's like dry aged beef right. is a huge, you know, a big dollar item, and or even fish like right. can be also super sort of like, you know, more premium product.
Right.
And I think that in culinary school, you do get more training of like how to handle those, like how to look for quality, how to make sure they're still right. fresh,
exactly.
how to, you know, how to like keep them in good condition.
What knives to use, mm. what tools to use, how to wrap it,
whereas,
you know, how to keep the freshness of right. the cheese. Whereas, you know, in kitchens, you don't get that specifically for cheese.
And is it more that it's like thought of as a front of house responsibility?
No, it's an entirely back of house responsibility
yeah.
because they're handling the product.
Right, right.
So I feel, you know, over and over I've encountered that where, yes, we'd love to bring this cheese in. But first of all, we need to recipe test it. Mm. We need to, you know, put it on our menu. And then we need to know how to keep it on our menu by handling it correctly, storing it correctly. Mm. You know, a lot of chefs are like, yeah, we have a great cheese plate. You know, maybe the cheese can go on the cheese plate. But then, you know, they're looking for seasonal special items that are seasonal. And, you know, a lot of Jeez. Chefs are like farm to table.
Right.
So we also have seasonal creamery to table cheeses, mm-hmm. you know, and they're interested in it, but it's really hard for them to take that leap mm. into embracing that and focusing on these seasonal cheeses, or not necessarily seasonal cheeses, but special cheeses
right.
where they're going to pay a little bit more and they're going to like showcase it as the star of the dish.
Right. Not so much right. as just like a filler or, you know, a melty ingredient
yeah, exactly.
that just goes in there.
Exactly. I dream of days where you will never see the word cheese on a menu. It will have a name.
Ah.
You know, so that will force the chef or whoever's writing the menu or mm-hmm. whoever to actually name the cheese because, you know, there's...
I wonder, I mean, how can, in some circumstances as a consumer, you can affect change like this? You know, like
right.
let's say as a consumer, I want to go to a decent restaurant, and if they serve a mac and cheese, I would like that mac and cheese to be made with really nice cheese.
Right.
Or even if it's not like something so cheese forward as mac and cheese, but maybe something else like, I don't even know. What has cheese on it?
Everything.
I mean, like, let's say even just
burgers,
a steak. Yeah,
or,
steak
yeah,
or a burger with blue cheese on it
exactly.
or something. Let's say, you know, I really want to go to a place that's going to serve something super special on those dishes.
Right.
I mean, is asking, I mean, in one sense, you ask the waiter, hey, what's the cheese on your burger? And they're like,
right, right.
Does that get back to the chef? Is that going to have an impact?
Well, it starts with the, you know, desire of the chef to put the item on the menu, to put the different cheeses that you can choose for, let's say, mm-hmm. for a steak or for a burger. And then, obviously, it goes into front of house training. Because,
right.
and, you know, that's for every menu item. Like, at the front mm-hmm. of house, if the servers and the floor managers aren't overseeing the servers and they're not selling the item or know how to describe the item, then
yeah.
you might as well not have it on
right. It's so sad when
menu.
You go to a restaurant and
right.
you're like, what cheeses are on the cheese course? And they're like, there's a cow cheese
exactly.
and a goat.
Exactly.
You're like,
exactly.
do you have any other information?
I know. And that, you know, that really, that's, you know, that's a missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just a missed opportunity. I feel like hospitality-oriented front of house and back of house, they, you know, want that added education. They want
right.
to learn about the product. They want to know about the wines. They want to know about where the vegetables come from. They want to know where the meat comes from.
Right.
And they want to know where their cheese comes from.
Right.
But, you know, not all the restaurants all over the country. You know, I'm in New York City, so
right.
I'm very biased. But I do eat in different cities all over the country. And it's, you know, I feel like you know, that should be something that everybody's interested in, mm-hmm. you know the product.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I tend to think that New York, our food scene in New York City is so sort of cut above and so special. And then, you know, I sort of had my mind opened recently. I was talking to a cheesemaker in the Midwest and I was lamenting that I felt like cheese plates had fallen off menus in New York. Like I wasn't seeing restaurants offering cheese plates that often or as much as I used to. And that cheesemaker said, like, in my community, every single bar and restaurant has a cheese plate or a cheese board on the menu.
Right.
And so in that sense, I think there are pockets in the U.S. that are, you know, less culinary destinations, but really do utilize the like hyper local cheese making
right.
community.
Right.
But still, I'm not sure that cheese is getting in the menu as
right.
an ingredient.
Right.
Right.
And I see that also, Elena, when I travel to different cities. I'm like, oh, there's a cheese restaurant here.
Right.
Like, you know, I've never heard of like this cheese restaurant, but mm-hmm. they are focused on local cheeses and they have a cheese plate. Everywhere I go, there's a cheese plate. This is great. And yes, maybe in New York City, I still see it a lot, but maybe yeah. in New York City, it's like, you know, it was more important on the menu, now less so.
Yeah.
But I do see it all over the country and that's like really exciting.
Yeah.
So how do we get the cheese from the cheese plate onto
the
menu?
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Well, yeah.
So with the cheese course, which I'll talk about for a second, are yeah. like they're you know, pop-up dinners that I do with Laura Sutter, who's a cheese lady as well. We both do dinners that focus on cheese as the star protein.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're focusing as cheese professionals on the texture, on the flavor profile, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like a pantry for us. And we are trying to like expose, like general consumer comes to these events, also industry, but we want to like kind of inspire people to go beyond melting the cheese.
Mm.
Okay. So your cheesemonger is talking to you about a specific profile when they're selling you that cheese.
Right.
You know, what does that inspire you to make? And what can I make? And why not come home and say, hey, honey, what's for dinner? Cheese is for dinner.
Yeah.
You know?
So cool.
Why not? Because it's a beautiful item. It's, you know, it doesn't have to be eaten at the end or the beginning.
Right. It's also, I mean, nutrition-wise,
yeah.
it's got it all.
Yep.
It can totally be the star of the show.
It totally can. And if it's a properly made cheese, all of us know it's like super filling.
Right.
It's satisfying. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's kind of what we try and focus on with the cheese course. And, you know, slowly I talk to anyone who will talk to me,
but
literally I will chew your ear off about, basically, you know, cheese as a protein and
yeah.
as a star and on your, you know, in a dish.
Mm.
So hopefully just, I mean, this conversation is hopefully to inspire more people to talk about cheese, not necessarily, I mean, we have as an industry, cheese plates down.
Yeah, cheese
like,
plates,
cheese
like we got
plates,
it. The cheese board.
Reaching like
it's
levels
nuts.
Of, you know, I'm so, it's amazing.
Yesterday was National Cheese Lovers Day.
Yeah.
It was like all over Instagram.
Right.
People get the cheese plate.
People are all over the cheese plates. We are like, yeah, it's amazing what, you know, we've done with the cheese plates and platters, of course. But how now, as cheesemongers mm-hmm. and as cheese professionals, we need to start talking nonstop about
mm-hmm.
how we use cheese as, you know, cooking with cheese.
And I also
and
think...
inspire that.
Right. And yeah. it, you know, it answers this question of, have we saturated a retail market in some areas of the country? And if
right.
so, I mean, restaurants are also, are huge opportunities for cheesemakers to have to move volume.
Right.
You know, even you don't have to be a top performing restaurant even to move a lot of cheese. Like
right.
if you're just doing okay and your business is good and you have 5 ounces of cheese through your menu
right.
on different dishes, it's like for a cheesemaker that equates to a pretty big weekly delivery.
Right.
Right. You know?
You know, and like I think there's some work to be done across the industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the retail mongers, but it's in distribution
mm-hmm.
and it's in, you know, sales, it's in, you know, cheesemakers themselves and reps. And it's basically how do we educate in a respectful way, of course.
Right.
And how do we, you know, talk about these cheeses to entice chefs to use them more as an ingredient and as a staple. You know, if you asked me earlier, basically how, you know, what does that equate to, like that they want a certain price point. So, you know, if you talk to like a chef that goes through a lot of Pecorino Romano, they're like, we want the $5 one, you know, whatever. That's what we get. We're not interested. If they were aware, and I'm sure some of them are, but if you can, like, you know, instill in them that, okay, there are Pecorino Romanos with, you know, different salt content, different acidity, you know, there are different uses for different Pecorinos, you know, like, have you tasted them? You know, and it might inspire a chef, you know, to
change
be like,
oh,
whoa, that was an amazing, you know, that was a hit of umami. I need that.
That's going to make my dish taste better.
Which, you know, the food distribution, they do an amazing job at that, obviously, you know, but it's just like there is so much room for education and particularly also kind of reaching, offering education to back of house. And chefs. And like, how do we get them into seats? Maybe like, you know, in the restaurant, not just necessarily the front of house knowing the name of the cheese, but the back of house needs to know the name of the cheese.
And I want to talk more about that. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, let's talk more about how we get that message across to the right people. Because I'm really interested in that. I think that is the challenging part of the equation here.
So challenging.
All right. We'll be right back after a quick break.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and I'm here with Rachel Freer, culinary specialist and back-of-house cheese champion. We're on a roll. Before the break, we were talking about, you know, how to get the message about cheese as a your main protein, cheese as a key ingredient, not just a cheese plate item. How to get this message to back-of-house staff. The head chef, yes, but also the sous chefs, the line cooks, everybody, like how to get this in more of kitchen culture.
Kitchen
we don't
culture.
Have any obvious answers.
Not yet. I mean, this is,
But we do have some ideas.
So once again, it's back to the education. It's back to giving them confidence in working in this product, I think it's a joint effort on all walks of the cheese industry to be inviting for cheese education. Maybe it is, you know, like I do a little work with counterculture. And
right.
I go around the
country. A little work. Listeners, Rachel is like the, she makes it happen with a small team of amazing women.
Lassa, yes, she puts up with me and my craziness of, let's do this and, you know, and let's do that. So we go around and pop up cheese education for industry. And,
listeners, if you haven't gone to or been following the counterculture events, definitely check them out. There's going to be, what, four this year?
We're going to Salt Lake City. We're going to San Francisco. We are, Chicago, and I can't remember the fourth one right now.
They're always interesting destinations, and I feel like they're always, I mean, San Francisco's kind of has a good cheese scene, but for the most part, they've been in places where I think there haven't been organized cheese events that often.
And we were focused on cheese education.
Right.
You know, it's usually free to attend so people can come and learn. Lasse brought me on a couple years ago to outreach to culinary. We've been talking about this for a few years now.
Right.
And, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy getting a chef or a back of house, you know, restaurant professional to come for a conference or to sit for more than an hour.
Especially when you're talking about a work week being 50 to 60 hours easily,
right?
There's not many hours outside
of
the kitchen.
Exactly.
Right?
So, you know, but I do see that when they do make it, they are so inspired.
Right.
And they have a million questions. They have more questions than anyone in the room.
Oh, I love that.
You know, just talking to chefs and that I meet randomly in different places, it's always the best questions about cheese. Mm. And it's like a rapid fire, really quick, and then they're gone.
That pretty much sums up a chef interaction.
Exactly. So, you know, we're going to focus this year a little bit more on the culinary aspect and really the outreach to chefs and how to get them into the seats or get the back of house into the seats, you know, on how to handle cheese, how to cut cheese, how to properly, you know, respect that item, and hopefully to inspire them to not fear it and have more control and understanding. You know, how are we going to do that?
Still getting worked out.
Yes, attend a counterculture. But no, I think that chefs are really interested in showing their creativity. Mm-hmm. I think chefs are really interested in tasting new product. And I feel like they want to know more about the, you know, what are the creameries about? What are the cheesemakers about?
Right.
You know, oh, wait, they eat grass. Tell me more about the grass. You know, like they know grass-fed steaks are a thing. What does that mean, grass-fed? You know, if I have grass-fed steaks on my menu or meat on my menu, then I should probably have grass-fed cheese on my menu. You know, what does that mean? Like, is it what, you know, someone tells me, oh, it's 100% grass-fed. What does that mean, actually?
Right, and how does it equate to, what's that going to do for the final cheese? Because, you know, the interesting thing, just specifically about grass-fed or seasonal cheeses, is it's like, if a cheese is made in the height of summer, it's just, sometimes it actually, I mean, it depends cheese to cheese.
Right.
But when animals are eating dry feed, a lot of times there's more concentration of the milk. There might be more concentration of flavor. I mean, this is a little bit of a reach, but it's interesting to think about, like, there are more nuances just to, like, oh, grass-fed means healthier.
Right.
You know, yes, but also it could be more nuanced.
Right. And the same with, you know, meat as well.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no animal that's 100% grass-fed.
Right.
You know, what does a grain finish mean? What are those percentages? You know, what does that mean? Like, it's, they just need to understand it.
So do
you know,
you
the
think,
education about it.
Right.
You know,
like, do you think that there's an opportunity in culinary school for a different type of program?
Yes. And that is the big issue that we need to go after.
Right.
I do know there are some great culinary schools that have cheese programs, not really cheese programs, but they are developing more, you know, fermentation and cheese and, like, you know, a little bit more food science. But I think that is the one, you know, everyone needs to go after and partner with and inspire and work with.
Yeah, it seems like there's
the culinary students.
Right. And there's so much that seems listeners. For any, you know, entrepreneurial folks out there, this feels like a huge opportunity.
Right.
Because culinary schools are, you know, they're getting enrollments.
Right.
People are into it. Food is, you know, at top of mind. People want to, you know, have the glamorous kitchen life. They don't yet realize that the realities might be slightly different from what you see on TV. But... So they go to culinary school, like a lot of people are really excited about that. And having more cheese education just seems like this, like, gaping hole in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we did an event in a culinary school and we had, you know, young culinary students helping us prep for the event. And I would say we had maybe 6 students. They were all second year. 2 out of the 6 have ever tasted goat cheese in their life.
Wow.
You know, all 6 of them were terrified about the mold on the cheese. Mm. All 6 of them, by the end of the 2 or 3 days that we were there, were blown away by this amazing world of cheese, just the way I was blown away the first time I ever encountered, right. You know, the wonderful world of cheese.
Well, so that was, you know? That's a question I have, actually. As a culinary professional, were you, you know, line cooking your way through? Like, how did you come to cheese?
I am not culinary. I'm not you professionally trained.
No.
I did not go to culinary school.
You learned through the hard knocks, life of hard knocks in the
kitchen? I was inspired by cheese.
So cheese
threw me into the kitchen.
Unusual.
So I had a restaurant background. I was a restaurant manager for many years. I was certified as a restaurant manager, French Culinary Institute back in the day, mm-hmm. and then worked as a general manager. One of my jobs was overseeing a cafe and especially food store mm-hmm. when they had a cheese counter.
Uh-huh.
And I remember walking in and being like, my whole life, cheese was my favorite like food growing up as a kid.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wait, what? Oh my God. You know, tell me
right.
everything there is to know about buying this cheese, tasting it. And I was a general manager for two locations.
So,
I couldn't focus
uh-huh.
on the cheese.
Right.
And my boss would be like, where's Rachel? And I'm like, oh, she's at the cheese counter. I was blown away.
And so then what sent you to the kitchen?
So I overseeing, for some reason, managing restaurants that I did, like I managed like three restaurants up until that point. For some reason, I always was thrown into like overseeing the kitchen, like, you know, not mm-hmm. working in the kitchen, but actually
like
overseeing menu changes, overseeing ordering, like, you know, help sitting on recipe testing.
So you were,
it was like a natural inclination. I think I'm really good at writing menus apparently.
Yeah.
I was thrown into the bar. I'm a beverage professional as mm-hmm. well. You know, early on, I was thrown into everywhere I went. They're like, oh, you should just like come up with our beverage program
mm-hmm.
if they didn't have it,
right.
you know, got them certified. Or in a bar, I was always like, oh, we should have these cocktails. It was like a natural, like a flavor profile thing.
Right.
It was like, this makes sense to me. And, you know, I was just always like found myself working with the kitchen.
Right.
Or, you know, the bartender, like overseeing the menu.
Yeah.
And when I did fall in love with cheese and that general manager position, I fast forward at the end of that, I was like, oh my God, I need to work with cheese. I need to understand more. Murray's Cheese was opening Murray's Cheese Bar.
Yep. Delicious cheese focused restaurant right here in New York City.
And the ad was they were looking for a restaurant professional who's passionate about cheese. And
you're
I
like,
literally ran there and I was like, it's me. And it was Tia Keenan. It's one of my all time cheese mentors.
A dear friend.
Thank
and
you, Tia.
A friend of the show.
Yes. And also, you know, she just put out an amazing cookbook mm-hmm. on how to cook with cheese, which is super inspiring in general. And she's the one who hired me, you know, took a chance. Mm-hmm. I didn't have enough cheese background.
And she hired you for back of house.
No, she hired me for front of house. So Cheese Bar, the way it was set up, is like you had a, well, it was back of house, front of house hybrid.
Because you did the production of the
cheese plates on the floor, but it was a back of house position.
Right.
But half like kind of front of house in a way.
It's almost like, I mean, it was cheese station. It's an extra station in a way.
But we had to present at the table.
Yeah, and
we
it
had
was
to know
in
pairings.
The front.
We had to like be at the table. It was a very hospitality driven.
Right.
You know, and I received a beautiful cheese education from Murray's. You know, it was amazing. It was eye opening. Was very lucky to be able to, you know, work with so many beautiful cheeses. But all I could think about is like the cheeses and what, you know, the flavor profiles, and it would inspire me not just to make condiments to go with the cheeses,
uh-huh.
which is an amazing, you know, thing, but
yeah.
I really just wanted to take it further. And it was like the cheeses would talk to me and they'd be like, Rachel, you know, it's like this menu. Like for 2 years, I had like this menu growing in my head and like these things I needed to do. And like, yeah, you know, I worked with Cheese Bar a lot with menu items, but, you know, I could see in the like far future that like I needed to do
the cheese course.
Menus. Yeah.
Very
and, you know,
neat.
I really need to explore that. And I got to explore it a little at, you know, Cheese Bar at the end
mm-hmm.
With Monger's Table, which is like a 10-course cheese tasting menu. And then when I left, you know, at some point I went back to it doing the cheese course. And I have to say, it's a great, you know, general public come to these dinners.
Yeah.
And they are so inspired about, you know, eating an entire coursed menu of just cheese in a different way, and they are inspired.
So how do how do we find out about the cheese course, when your next dinners are, how to sign up? How do we do this?
So the cheese course dot it's the cheese course dot space. It's just kind
of a new URL.
Yeah, because you know .com wasn't out there, but it's basically the cheese course, and for me it works because it's like we're popping up in different spaces.
Uh-huh.
Work with me here.
I think this.
So the website, we're working on an overhaul of it, but you can see the list of all the events.
Oh, there, great!
And the dinners coming up, and
And you can register there.
Yeah, you can get. You can sign up, and they get more info about the dinners.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well. Exciting.
Yeah, super exciting.
I'm going to be going online later tonight.
I think you've been to one.
Yes, I have. And it was exceptional. It was so much fun. And, you know, even as someone who's worked in cheese for a decade or so, it's like it really opened my mind. Yeah. So
cheese is inspiring.
It totally is. Yeah. That's why we're all here.
Hey, chefs out there, cheese is inspiring.
Get back to your roots. Well, we're just about at the end of our time here. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. This was fun.
This was great.
Yeah.
Listeners, I'm also curious, what are your favorite cheese-focused restaurants? We would love to know spots you frequent that give our favorite ingredient a front and center role. You can tweet us at Cutting the Curd. We're Cutting the Curd on Instagram, or email us at cuttingthecurd@heritageradionetwork.org. And don't forget the cheesecourse.space for a list of Rachel's upcoming cheese-focused dinners, which just sounds so fun and so unique. And yeah, that's it, folks. We'll be back next week with more Cutting the Curd.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.